Good morning, everyone. I'm Chris Begel. I'm the director of sales, and I'm going to be the last speaker before the conversation this morning. For today's presentation, I actually took the assignment quite literally about metadata being the content. So I'm going to talk about how we generate metadata and how they become the content, become the end product. Before that, I'd like to introduce our company a little bit. We're a text mining vendor, so we're a software vendor. We're making software. We've been around for almost a decade now. Prior to that, we were with IBM or Xerox, depending on who you're talking to in the company. And our focus is really developing text mining product for different vertical markets, one of them being publishing. And you will see some of our customers in this presentation. I just wanted to start the presentation by kind of beating a dead horse now, because this is a slide that is pretty well known that I stole from Nova Spivak about where we're at in terms of technologies. And I think you can draw a parallel also with where we're at in terms of what the customers expect, because today it's all about putting the users back in charge, and you can see on this slide, a lot of the technologies slowly evolve to a better description of the content itself toward answering questions. You probably all heard about Wolfram Alpha, and the different new Google killers are trying to answer semantic questions. I think it's the new holy grail for the industry. And just to be a little more obvious, we're not there yet. We're just here, right before. So in this context, we're trying to bring our stone to the building, I would say, and bring tools to help make more intelligent content, if I can say so. So the first thing we do at TMS is work with linguistic and semantic tools to describe the content. So creating metadata that will then be used in applications such as the one described by Daryl. And we're using different techniques. The first technique we're using is linguistic. We apply that to identify the part of speech. I won't get into the boring details. But then we're able to add the different layers of abstraction up to the point where we can make what's the sentence we're looking at and what's the meaning behind the sentence. So in this case, being able to understand that you have a product that is mentioned, that this product is a drug with a specific dosage, that there is a symptom and that there's an ingestion of this product, and tells us that this is a potential adverse event. Okay. The idea here, of course, is to go from the words you have in the document, in a text that were locked into a kind of a silo, that would be the format, and free those words so that we can derive the meaning and use this meaning in two applications. Another example here, on a news content, of course you have the metadata that gives you a first level of information. Everybody today is used to having this type of information: title, source, author, date. Although there's a great challenge on working with the authors, as we've seen with Daryl. I think now the next step is really to get the meaning of this document. And applying taxonomies or applying ontologies is a nice thing. But that's a finite world, and it requires you to define kind of what you're looking for. What we're doing with text mining is kind of guess what we have in the text. So using different techniques, we're able to identify here that you have a part of speech that's talking about a company, a person, a location, organizations, technologies. And for this, we're using different techniques, like rules, for example, inferences, to extract this information. In addition to that, we add another layer. Once we have this information, we're also able to identify relationships or facts between those elements and try to understand what is Gilbarco, a company, doing in this context. So here we can see that they're announcing a new service, they're announcing a Google service, that we have a person, Lucy Sackett, that is working for this this company. And at the same time here, the tool is, I hate to say smart enough because, I mean, the tool is not smart, but we have the ability to make it a little smart and understand that you are talking about the same person here between Lucy Sackett and Sackett, normalize that with successive readouts of the text and using different rules. We're also able to identify that she's making an announcement to a media outlet and so on and so forth. So once you have this this information, well, the text has a new life. And you've seen with DAOL what you can already do with metadata. Here, with the semantic information we're able to pull, we can create a whole new life for this text that can live outside of the format it was provided in, and create new type of applications that we can make sense of right away. So I'm not talking about the end of scripture and text as we know it, but a new layer that helped the diffusion or distribution of knowledge. And, you know, without having to read thousands and thousands of documents, you can get a specific idea on a specific question. In this case, you have a map that represents the relationship between a pharmacia or a pharmaceutical company and different companies, different people at a given time. What's interesting with this type of representation is that this is taken out of several documents. This is summarized, this is a precise topic, and you always have access to the original source document if you need to get more information, if you want to make sure that this is the correct information, of course, and if you want to distribute this information. So with semantic extraction, what we're able to do here is create a new layer of knowledge on top of the content that will help the distribution of this this knowledge. Okay, so text mining is really an information access technology, and we're not talking about metadata anymore. We're talking about knowledge, really, and its different representations. And you can see here, this is the typical architecture for a tool where we process documents, we create a representation, and then we apply front-end tools to leverage them. So just to give you a quick example of how this relates for publishers, I started by saying that we work with a number of them. Well, first of all, in the editorial world, a number of tasks that are done by editors today are purely descriptive of the content they've produced. It's probably not the best use of their time, especially since you know the value of the content. So we can automate a number of those tasks using text mining. So that would be applying the taxonomies, but that would be also extracting specific information, identifying the different concepts, and adding that to the text as a way to power your applications. On the website, and because this is probably the biggest revolution to date for the publishing industry, there are a number of things that you can do. First of all, content enrichment will significantly lower the cost to bring your content to the web. We had this case for a number of our customers because we can automatically describe this content. In addition to that, today what works on the web are communities, and those communities can be quite small or can be quite large, but the main idea behind that is there's a new way to monetize the content. It's not a one-size-fits-all. People have a specific view on the content, and they're not vendor-specific. They're really knowledge-specific. They want to answer a question, and it doesn't matter if they go to Thomson, doesn't matter if they go to Walter Skruer. They want an answer to the question. So what text mining does is provides a description of the content across the board, provide a description of the knowledge with semantic. And since this is a technology that's highly scalable, it means that you can provide description with different facets for all the communities you want to address. So at the same time, you know, the web really clearly reduced the costs to distribute the content. You don't have to print a book anymore and have distributors to bring it to your users. And what we are enabling you to do now is lowering the cost of describing this content and providing it to the communities where you can better monetize the content. You have some of the examples here of what we do on the website. I'll describe this a little further. Something also very interesting we do with tax mining is on the product management side. I'm sure a lot of you have already thought, what do I have in my backfires? Is there anything I could make of this content? Is there any way for me to monetize this? One of my customers and a good friend has had this a funny phrase last year at our user conference. Publishers are sitting on their huge assets. And what he meant with that is, well, you have a lot of content. A lot of it has been monetized at the time, and there was no way for you to monetize it again. But, well, now there is. And with text mining, you can quickly explore all this content, try to repackage it in different ways. So it's not repackaged in a journal, not repackaged in a specific article, but it's on the topic. So you can create a microsite, you can create a new community, provide this content as a feed, but you can manipulate this content very quickly. Okay, and we provide interfaces for that as well. So really on the website, because I want to go back to that, and the examples I'm going to give you now are really geared to that. The main idea is to retain the customer so that we can provide him with the information he's looking for. We can help you expose what they call the long tail. So one of the main concept of the Web 2.0, I don't want to say a fad now, but you know it's kind of going away. And this idea of the long tail, this idea of exposing the content maybe once to one user that finds a lot of value in it and monetizing this content, I think this is the time for the publishing industry to take advantage of that more than they have in the past. iTunes is a great example of monetizing, you know, very alternative content only once, twice, addressing that into communities. I'm sure in your content you have the same kind of opportunities. And just finding the right community and the right way to serve this content, this is what text mining is about. Another thing also to keep in mind, text mining is a great way to enhance search. And you know, contrary to what a lot of people think, 70% of all the searches started on the web don't start on the main search portal. They don't start on Google. And I'm sure you know that better than anybody else. If a scientist has a specific question, he's not going to go to Google to find an answer. He's going to go to a specific portal he trusts and authoritative content. So paying attention to search is really critical in this domain. And I try to have a kind of condensed presentation, so I'll leave you with three examples of what we have done in the past. I'm not sure you can see very much the title here, but the first example I want to bring up to your attention is what we've done with the Patent Chemistry Database. It's a product sold by Elsevier that was released in 2004. And it's actually a project that started as a dare. We started working with those guys in Germany, in Hamburg. And they had this Bellstein content sitting around that they got from a deal with Bellstein in 97, something like that. And some of the guys there were trying to figure out what to do with this content. As you know, the patent space, and especially the patent chemistry space, was overcrowded at the time. You had a lot of databases already available, slowly being acquired by Thomson Reuters or CAS. And what Elsevier wanted to do was create a new experience, a new way to access this content. Not have people search using keywords, Boolean searches, very complex search, and train those people on their systems, but rather go directly to the scientists and let them ask the system a question. So for this, what they needed is to create this knowledge layer on top of the content to be able to give them and add an interface so that the scientists could ask their question. So what we have done in this project with them was to describe the content, so extract chemical names, the different forms of chemical names, extract chemical reactions, different type of attributes, product, edux, solvent, all this. And once they had this metadata available, they were able to create an interface where you can draw a substructure directly to match against the chemical names that were extracted, because they were translated into a structure, and ask for specific condition of the experiment. And the result that they return to the scientist is not documented directly. It's a list of the compounds that match this query. So you have directly an answer instead of having a list of documents to read, which makes the content much more digestible, I would say, for the users. A second example I wanted to bring to your attention, it's very close to iTunes in a sense where the main idea is to help serve several times, maybe once or twice, an article to user on a site. And this is what we've done with Springer, on SpringerLink, creating a similarity feature based on... directly based on metadata, it's based on similarity between articles. So with our engines, we create a representation of each of the documents based on the main topics. So here, since Springer has a lot of content and it's cross-disciplinary, we create an approach that doesn't require any taxonomy or ontology, so we don't have any a priori knowledge of the content. But we're able to describe the content and find the main topics based on different algorithms that we've created and a knowledge base based on Wikipedia. And using this this algorithm, we're able to find what are the most relevant topics of a text and then find the related articles for the articles they serve to the user. So anytime you go to SpringerLink, you look at one of the articles, you will see you have the related content. It's not based on user behavior. It's directly based on the similarity of this article with others, okay, and the concepts they share. And finally, another example where, in this case, the content the metadata is really the content. It's one of those projects we've done with EFL, it's a French law publisher, and we created a new product that is a compensation database. So the goal here is clearly to answer specific questions lawyers have, deriving this from content they already had. So we're actually repurposing the content from EFL, mostly case laws. And we're extracting specific information so that the lawyers can answer questions such as, in this specific case, in my region, what kind of compensation can be awarded? What is the history of this judge in terms of decision and so on and so forth? So for that, we go directly through the documents and we extract the information and we recreate a database. So we left it again to EFL to create their own interface to query the content. But this is a case where here the lawyers are not interested in reading the case laws. They're not interested in reading the content per se. They're interested in answering questions based on this content. Okay. So here it's really an example where the metadata becomes the content. Okay. So why don't you have a kind of a short presentation before we can have a discussion. So if you have any questions...
I think we can take this opportunity now. We have about 15 minutes left to open up for any questions that we have for anyone on the panel. They can get a question about something they've already done or they've already talked about. Maybe it's a question that you came into this session and nobody addressed. Yes, go ahead. Nice caveat at the end there, right, without saying the fortune. Can I ask a question? Do you have a sense of what metadata you want to apply to this? Is it a classification? Thank you.
address from, how your tools might handle that if you got that content set in.
This is what I call a typical Brazil telephone problem. Instead of laying all these landlines, they just went cellular. I would suggest that you should look at a Calexis or a Tennis or other vendor, because basically what we can do, we can take your data, structured or unstructured, and then we can put it through our engine, and we can fingerprint it for you. Costs, of course, put costs aside, it's definitely doable and achievable. And you'll be able to leapfrog from where you are to a whole new medium by which your users will get a visualization that will allow them to do searches beyond what they currently are able to do now in the standard ANI and Boolean search.
What type of prep work would the publisher need to do before they handed that content over to you?
Pretty much. Our technical folks, you can send us the data via FTP, and we take it from there.
Okay. So just they can take the Word documents or whatever format it is.
There's some cleanup involved, of course, that our technical team does. But they've been doing this since the SHARE project back in the 90s, so they're pretty good at it.
Do you have any?
Do you have keywords? Thank you. why am I laughing? Did the author supply keywords? Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe we will have that fist fight that we talked about. So I would say, absolutely. I mean, either one of these two, but I would also argue that a little bit of prep work, either by you, publisher, or it can be outsourced, can also go a long way. I think giving these two guys more hooks in the data to act upon will only make it a better solution. But it's weird. I mean, it's not like you have to go all one way or all the other. And it's a question of what are you trying to get out of it, and how much investment are you going to be able to justify? I used to joke about the 1,000 monks of metadata. You know, if we had the resources, you could tag every word of every article ever published. But it's a question of measuring resources versus what you're going to get out of it. So I would say I would argue for a little bit of prep work before sending it off to one of these guys, and then they could even make a more powerful solution on the back end.
And let me add, it's also important, like the American Association for Cancer Research is a customer of ours, and we've been working with them. And it's so important for you to really understand what do you want to put in scope, and where do you really want to take it, because sometimes you'll get definition creep. And then what the conversation started here, and then you get a quote for this, but then it said, "Well, I'd like to do this, and that," and scope creep can enhance. So you really got to say the prep work is good, but also to really have a vision about where you want to go.
Yeah, he's right, and stick to that vision.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. It depends on the nature of the content. It might involve a subject matter expert or team of experts looking at it and saying, I'm trying to think of innocuous example. I'll take medical data. So if you had subject matter experts who weren't necessarily doctors but knew what they were looking at, and they could classify, we've got more than half the articles are about cardiology, then that might point you in a certain direction. The articles are all over the place. And, I mean, there's some sort of sorting or class categorizing that can not only helps you in your whatever you're going to do in the end, but it helps guide the approach. Because I think, like, Temis is a perfect example of if you know exactly, and Chris will be happy to correct me if I'm misstating anything, but
it's not furious.
Yeah, exactly. But if you, it's really good at going for that precision when you really have nothing to act upon. Is that fair?
It's a fair assessment. Actually, in
a lot of the projects we undertake, people ask us to take a look at the data, first, and try to work with them to create a taxonomy or an ontology or anything we need. So we have created off the shelf what we call skill cartridges, annotators for different domains, for chemistry, for medicine, for biology, for engineering. But in the end, it always comes down to this is an editorial work. Even if we have a medical annotator and you have medical content, it doesn't mean it's the right fit. It means that we have probably 60% of the work done already. Then we need to really refine that and adapt it to the product you want to develop. The indexing will be different if it is just to supplement a search, or if it is to create a whole new product, or if it is to help with social networking or anything like that.
I think it's an interesting point to bring up, if I understood you correctly, in terms of a combination of automated and human processing, mm-hmm. where it's not like you take all your content and throw it to one of these guys, and they send it back to you, and it's all done, right? And it sounds like you go through some iterations where the publisher or the editors are looking, okay, how is this classified, and work with you to get to a point where they're happy with it.
Right? Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if I can draw a distinction for us, we have in the publishing space, what we call the information and media space for Temis, we have two type of customers. We have the STM legal publishers for whom it's their business, and being involved in a process defining in a very detailed manner what are the metadata, how to apply them. This is the core of their business. So LexisNexis makes a living out of that, Thomson Reuters, everybody. Media companies we're working with, like magazine publishers, they have a kind of a looser approach, and we have a web service for that where they actually send us the content and we just return the XML. But in those companies, we're just helping with the SEO. So, it's a different game. Depending on what you're expecting from the enrichment, I think, and in the case of the society, you need to be hands-on in terms of approach.
Jake, you have a
question. So the first thing that Ed said to that question was about the users and what they would want, how they like to use the content. So I think that when you're talking about maybe the place to start, you need to understand what kind of questions the users are asking that content set,
Absolutely.
How they use the content,
yep.
and then tailoring your metadata strategy towards that. And then, using someone to apply that those rules. But I think really starting, it's kind of not looking at the content and saying,
what should I do with it?
Right. Because David's right. You can do it in a million ways. I heard a researcher once take a journal article and said it took us a year and a half to tag this, and next year we have to do another article. Because he went for the whole hog, every possible solution. But I think if you start with your users and say, they're trying to do this, like that was a great example from the law, pulling out the numbers out of the lawsuit. It has a specific need that came to users. I assume it didn't come from someone just brainstorming, we have numbers in our data. So maybe you focus on that, and it'll kind of narrow your
That's a good point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Take a question in the back there.
Speaking of users, I work in a general library, and there are a lot of questions about performing literature reviews. So say I have a user who wants to do a 20-year literature review on whatever medical science and topic. What text mining is so appealing to that researcher, because it's so much easier, obviously, than automated, than to read through hundreds of tons of articles. But isn't it totally dependent on getting that access to the article level and mining it at that level? And how will that be possible? I can direct that person to PubMed and we can mine abstracts. Mm-hmm. But if that person really wanted to do a thorough literature review on an automatic basis, how could you do that?
Well, in the case of Asclepios Hospital System, we actually worked out agreements with the publishers. Now, to do that for each account, that will be quite challenging. I think it's probably going to take an industry initiative like Crossref, where folks will get access to that type of data. But for the most part, we have fingerprinted the abstracts, and that has proven to be pretty good. Of course, it's better to have the full text, but in absence of the full text, the abstract worked pretty well for us.
Yeah, I don't think there's any technology limitation on what you're mining, really. We have applications across different industries. We work a lot with pharmaceutical companies, car makers, you know, media companies. So the type of content varies a lot, and there's no limitation in mining an article. Then it depends on the type of questions you want to ask. You know, if it is an overview of 20 years of content, you might not need to go back to each and every article. And for this, we can use techniques like clustering or heat maps to look at the content overall. Then if you have more precise questions like, you know, what is the protein that's interacting with this biological system, then we will mine the full text article and extract precisely the information you're looking for.
Are there any other questions? We're just up about 12:15. Any of you guys have any questions?
Where's lunch?
That sounds good. All right, thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.